from the trails, woods, and waters of the Great Lakes State to the Michigan Talk Network. It's Wild Michigan with your host, Duran Martinez.
Welcome to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez, your host on the Michigan Talk Network, brought to you again by Lucky Buck Deer Mineral. Spring is a great time as long as you know the rules before using any mineral. Lucky Buck has been with us going on a year, 3.5 now. I absolutely love those guys and love their product. And you can check them all out at lucky-buck.com. Find out the benefits and advantages of Lucky Buck. And again, make sure you know the rules. And Lucky Buck has them posted on their website. Again, for all the states, wherever you listen to Wild Michigan, it is posted up there. Also want to thank our friends at Darton Archery. Maybe this turkey season I'll actually get a turkey with a bow. I've gone the past couple of years without a bird, and it's okay. It's been a lot of fun and a learning process. My fiance Sarah Marie has been out in the blind with us, and she's waiting on her first bird. So we'll see. We got our first season all picked out this year, and we're ready to go. And whenever we talk about turkeys, we think of our good friend Al Stewart from the Michigan DNR, who's joining us right now. Good morning, Al. How are you?
Hey, I'm great. Thanks for having me, Grant.
Oh, no, always good to have you along here. And I'm going to tell you right now, yesterday I was out driving around and I happened upon a flock of turkeys in the industrial area where the studios here for Wild Michigan are. And I kind of drove up on them. They didn't seem to be in too much of a hurry. And I called them a little bit. And of course, they started going into their strut because there's hens and toms mixed in. And then I threw out the horrible gobble, and of course, shock gobble returned. And it was quite cool to watch them about 20 yards from me just gobbling and strutting and everything else. I had a great time watching that.
Oh, isn't it? This is just a great time of the year to see all wildlife kind of getting ready for the breeding season and coming online. Spring's a great time, and turkey hunting's a great outdoor activity, that's for sure.
Now, they seemed to be rather protective of these hens already. I mean, there was about three or four toms in with a big group of hens, and I didn't know if they were just, this is basically the courting process, or they're really getting ready to get down to business.
Well, actually, this is the time when they start to get serious about it, that's for sure. You know, the toms began to have their areas and defend their areas. The hunting season overall, which starts here in the towards the end of April, so not too far away. So the hunting season starts after the majority of the hens have already been bred once. So that's the intent of that. So a lot of things are happening prior to the season even opening, and toms defending their territories, toms trying to hook up with some hens, and with the way the spring's going, other than a day like today, it's I think spring's going to be early. You know, the forest, the agricultural forecast suggests spring will be earlier. Let's just say normal, and I think those first couple weeks of the spring turkey season are going to be outstanding.
Now, the winter before last, we had a pretty difficult season. A lot of cold, a lot of snow, a lot of ice on the lakes. This year, we really didn't have that. We've had, according to like our good friend Andy Provenzano said, we had that El Nino come in, and it's really affected things. Warmer air trends. Of course, we had a last-minute snow up in the middle northern portions of the Lower Peninsula that really dumped on their area quite a bit, but down here where I'm at in southern Michigan, it didn't seem to affect it. How is this winter treated our birds? I mean, it seems to be they'd be okay with that year class coming in.
Yeah, I think we're going to do well. There's plenty of turkeys out there. They're fairly widely distributed across across the landscape. You know, certainly bird numbers are down from maybe 10 years ago before we had some of these harder winters and actually more related to cold, wet springs, production. Mm-hmm. We've had a lower production, but this winter has been great for turkeys. They've been able to get around, move around. And one of the things we have to understand is that the ancestral range, like where turkeys have always lived, is a line from south of the line from Muskegon to Bay City. So that's the range of wild turkeys. Anything north of that is really kind of gravy. So we expect birds north of that line to fluctuate a little bit more with winter conditions, but also that's when you have those colder, wetter springs just at that key time, you know, when the eggs are hatching and the poults are just getting out.
Now, when will these birds start laying their eggs? We know they've been, you know, will be in the process of being bred at least once right now. But when will we see the ground nesting really start heavy with these birds?
Well, you know, you'll see birds laying eggs, the end of April, right in there, you know, about the 15th of April in some cases, you know, that'd be on the early end of it. But, you know, sometimes on the 1st of May, you can see poults. You know, that's rare. Usually they hatch in early June. So, you know, turkey lays a dozen eggs. They do that over a 14, 15-day period. You know, it takes them another 28 days to hatch them. So, you know, you're looking at a couple months in here of things going on. But, yeah, the hens are starting to scout around to look for places to, you know, lay eggs you know, that territory that the hens want to have for their broods.
Al Stewart from the Michigan DNR is joining us here on Wild Michigan, upland game bird specialist. You can find out more about what we have going on our website, wildmichiganradio.com. You can follow our podcast and everything else there. Al has been a part of this show since our very beginnings. And this is now, Al, believe it or not, we are in our 10th year.
Wow,
of the
great show.
Yeah, I know. I don't know where it all went. I mean, we started with one station in a small studio. Now we're in a little bit bigger studio, but, you know, all over the state and the podcast going everywhere. But, you know, the information is always good. Sometimes it's the same, but sometimes there are some new things that come our way. Now, let's take a hypothetical, for instance. I mean, it doesn't look like we're going to get the really wet weather that could affect these ground nesting birds, but should we have a period come in where it makes laying difficult or the hatching difficult, would they in fact probably lay another clutch of eggs?
Well, they can re-nest. Usually when they do that, there's fewer eggs. And usually most of the re-nesting is done with hens, you know, on the front end of the setting cycle.
Mm-hmm.
Versus the back end. So if they're within a few days of hatching, that hen probably will not re-nest. And those are the hens that you see, you know, midsummer, that it's a group of hens with no poults with them, and they're just, you know, hanging out in a field together as a group. Then you find another group of birds that are, you know, two or three hens with their broods. That's another one. And then you find, you know, the toms, the adult toms, in groups of three to five, usually, and they don't tolerate. They don't hang around with the hens,
right? Yeah, it
hardly
seems
at all. Midsummer, they just kind of they're bachelors at that point. They just go off and do their own thing. I mean, the toms really just breed the hens and then move on and do other things. The hens have sole responsibility for sitting on the eggs, hatching the eggs, and getting the chicks or the poults, you know, up to the surviving age.
Man, isn't that the life?
yeah, right, you know. You know, so whether you hunt turkeys or not, you know, their life expectancy is, their average life expectancy is about 18 months, whether they're hunted or not. So the majority of that mortality actually occurs in the first 2 weeks of life, and that's that period before the poults are able to fly. So at 2 weeks, they're able to fly, and they can get up off the ground, roosting in the trees, and it's harder for other things to, you know, get them and eat them.
Sure. Al Stewart is our guest. You're listening to Wild Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network, brought to you by Lucky Buck Deer Mineral, lucky-buck.com. There's a link right on the front page of our website, wildmichiganradio.com. More coming your way with Al next on Wild Michigan.
You can join us on Facebook or listen to podcasts, all from our website at wildmichiganradio.com. Now, back to Duran Martinez and Wild Michigan.
Hey, up in the back. horse down in the holler. Old boy's feeling like a dog on a collar. Keeping that chain pulled tight. Waiting on Saturday night.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I am Duran Martinez. 10 years on the Michigan Talk Network. Thank you so much, everybody listening via podcast and our affiliate stations throughout the Great Lakes State. Appreciate you joining us. Find us online at wildmichiganradio.com, facebook.com/wildmichigan, and on Twitter at wildmichigan, Instagram. We're all there. We're everywhere. But and it seems we've been everywhere also, finally trying to get ourselves back on track, coming back from the Bassmaster Classic a couple of weeks ago, getting ready for turkey season. First day opens up April 18th. If I'm correct, Al Stewart, Michigan Upland Game Bird Specialist, joining us on the show. Al, am I right? I've got my tag in my pocket. I'm not looking at it.
Oh, yeah. No, you're right on the, money. The opening day is April 18th. That's when it really begins. And like I said, this year, I'm predicting, you know, we'll have some pretty good weather through there. We may have some rain, but in the last few years, that those first 2 weeks of the season, it's been cold, wet, or snowy, even in the southern part of the state. So,
sure.
And turkey hunting is something where, you know, people believe, you know, that they have to be out there on the very opening day of the season to, you know, have greater success. And the reality of it is, for turkey hunting, the opening day and the last day, the hunter success is almost the same, and it's only off by a few percentage points. Maybe user error might be the way to say that. You know, deer hunting, a lot of our deer harvest occurs in the first 3 days of the season, mm-hmm. for the gun deer season, and that's not true for turkeys. So, it's been difficult over time for people to understand that and then shift to understand or recognize that, you know, mid-May is a really great time to be hunting turkeys. So, that's what we have going on. And then, you know, in Michigan, people kind of wonder, how do we stand nationally? Well, you know, we're sixth or seventh in the nation for turkey harvest, and we're rated as having some of the highest quality turkey hunting in the country. That ain't all bad when you understand that, you know, the full turkey range, the best turkey habitat is that line south of that line from Bay City to Muskegon. So, and even that is good, not excellent. And, you know, when you compare that to Missouri, we have nearly as many people who apply or hunt or participate in Michigan as what Missouri has. And we have a much longer season. So, we're trying to provide good things for turkey sure. hunters. And, as it turns out, we survey turkey hunters at a fairly, you know, high rate both spring and fall, and the majority of turkey hunters are real satisfied with the program we have in place. So, you know, I think we're doing pretty good that way. And in addition to that, we have, you know, over 7% or nearly 7% of turkey hunters are women. And, you know, that's that component that in the hunting field are trying to expose people to, a diversity of people to. You know, and like you were saying, you're going to be able to, you know, get out with your friends and go turkey hunting this spring too. So it's really great. The other part is nearly 11% of the people are under 17 years old. So right. Turkey hunting is that great opportunity to expose people to hunting activities or even outdoor activities overall. Because you get up in the morning, you hear that bird gobble. And you know something's out there, you know, and then you're just buying hope that you'll be able to get one in close enough to you. But right out of the get go, you know, when it's dark and the world is just coming alive, you know, you can hear the bird, and it's like, now this is really cool.
Yeah, you know, there's really nothing like it. The first time my daughter ever went turkey hunting with me, you know, I would call and you'd hear those gobblers off in the background respond. and her face lit up. Now, mind you, this is quite a while ago that she was out with me. And, you know, and the same thing with my fiance, Sarah Marie. She hears that sound and it's like, oh, my gosh. And then to see something come in is even better. And the one thing I will say that you mentioned, you know, that unfortunately there's a lot of people that think, well, it's raining, it's windy, that they're not going to respond. They're on a mission. They will respond. And my best turkey came on a day where it was spitting rain. It was nasty and windy, and I was about to give up.
Yeah, well, patience is really the key to turkey hunting, you know, at any aspect of it. And, you know, turkey hunting is also that activity where the majority of people don't get a turkey,
yeah.
You know, and it's like fishing. The best stories are about the ones that got away. And, you know, real avid turkey hunters are ones who say, you know what, we're real happy with the experience, with interacting with the bird, with hearing them gobble. We, you know, it's great. You know, to harvest a bird like you were talking about, gee, you know, last couple of years. But in talking with you, I know you have great turkey hunting stories, and those are the things that keep us coming back and make for what hunting is all about. You know, if someone really wants a turkey and that's their goal, then go to the grocery store and buy a frozen turkey and bring it home.
Yeah.
You know, the turkey hunting is not about that. Turkey hunting is about the experience and the you can reap the reward of harvesting a bird, but you know that's not the full motivation of it, I don't believe.
You know what, Al, and I'll be honest with you with this, like deer, there are a lot of different methods in which you can take a turkey: crossbow, a bow, shotgun. But what has I think it has surpassed deer hunting for me, not because the success of hunting deer for me has been that great, but it's a completely different aspect with birds, with turkeys, to be able to get on their level, get close, call them in, sometimes even stalk or change your positions. There's a lot of things in turkey hunting that you can do that you cannot do in deer hunting, and that's what really sets my love for turkey hunting above whitetail hunting in Michigan.
Yeah, you know, and again, at this time when we're trying to expose people to hunting and get them to come out and see the same values in it that you and I see in it, you know, to me, turkey hunting is the best vehicle or opportunity to expose people to that. You know, I like to say that turkeys are magnificent enough to admire, but ugly enough to harvest.
Sure.
You know, and so, you know, that's pretty key. But the other part of it is, it's an experience to get out and watch the world come alive. You know, in the morning and hear that bird gobble, and hearing birds gobble throughout the day, you know, still excite that inner kid in me, that person who loves the outdoors and natural resources. And every time I'm out, and I do, and really excellent turkey hunters that I know, they get more enjoyment out of taking someone who's never gone before,
sure,
you know, and exposing them to the outdoors and the experience than harvesting a bird themselves. You know, there are some people who say, gee, I want to shoot, you know, 5 turkeys. I want to shoot 10 turkeys in the spring. You know, and I've got this really good spot and there's lots of time. To me, is at this point where we need to get more people out.
Exactly.
More people exposed to it. Take somebody else out there with you.
Absolutely. Great words from Al Stewart. Appreciate you joining us, Al. Upland Game Bird Specialist, our turkey guy, our go-to guy for turkey here on Wild Michigan. WildMichiganRadio.com. Pick up the podcast. Check us out online. We're going to come back here on Wild Michigan. It's the Michigan Talk Network.
This is Mark Zona from Zona's Awesome Fishing Show, and you're listening to my guy, Duran Martinez, on Wild Michigan.
I'm on a first-name basis at the tackle shop. I got a charge account running up nonstop. They ought to give me my own parking spot. I can't fit another plug in my tackle box.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez. Brought to you in part by Costa Sunglasses, the clearest lenses on the planet. And see what's out there with Costa, man. Love my Costas. Getting ready to do some fishing. Just got back from the Bassmaster Classic. It was actually the beginning of March. So now I'm just, I'm really starting to get my feet, you know, back on the ground after doing so much traveling this year. And while there, while we were doing the expo at the Bassmaster Classic, I came across a really cool new product called the iBobber. Now, this is, it looks like, you know, the old red and white beach ball bobber, but it's got some really, really cool electronic wizardry behind it. I'm just going to put it that way. Jim Cardillo joins us right now. Jim, you are the product development consultant for Real Sonar, who puts out the iBobber. And when I looked at this, okay, you know, look, I've been around so much gadgetry in the outdoors that it was kind of like a semi-eye roll until I got over there and Alex explained it to me. Welcome to the show, sir. How are you?
Hey, I'm good, Duran. Thank you for having me.
No, not at all. But this is something that really kind of caught my eye. Usually when I give that initial, I'll go, oh, here we go again. But I looked at this. I'm like, okay. So I talked. I did a little interview with them on the floor of the expo. And then I got online, thank goodness for YouTube and the website. And I looked at some of the capabilities of the iBobber. And if you would please explain a little bit about what this is, because I, you know, the letter I, obviously we all know that's got to do with a phone, but the bobber, that's pretty obvious. But you put the two together and you got a really unique product in front of you.
Yeah, you sure do. Okay. First of all, in a broad brush description, it's a wireless remote fish finder. And what that means is simply, you can cast this into the water, open up your smart device, whether it's an iPhone, whether it's an Android phone, whether it's an iPad. That screen becomes the fish finder screen, and it relays information back from the iBobber that you cast out, and on it, it does a myriad of displayable and controllable features. So, let me tell you how it works. Well, let me back up and tell you how the whole thing got started.
Yeah, I was going to say, how did you get to the point where you are now? Because there's R&D that goes into this that's going to take almost a lifetime, I'm thinking.
Okay, that's a great question. So Alex has never gone fishing. Now, Alex, by the way, is the inventor, the CEO, president of Real Sonar, R-E-E-L, Real Sonar. So, Alex, I take him fishing to Canada, and he's never been fishing. So he spends 3 days. I'm out there for 10, and he comes in for 3 days, and we go fishing. And, Alex, here's what you do. Here's how this and that. Now, in Canada, you're limited pretty much. If you're flying in, you're limited to what you can carry.
Sure.
So there's no real opportunity to bring fish finders unless the boat that you rent or have available has one built in. But even that has some negatives. So in any event, we talk about that. And I said, Alex, we're going to go to this one area. There should be walleye here. How do you know? Well, this is about 13 feet deep, and there's weeds at the bottom. And this time of year, they'll be in the weeds in this area. So generally, that's how I know. And he said, well, how can you look down there? Can you see? And I said, well, I don't have a fish finder, but typically a fish finder would do that. And he said, but what about over there? I said, what do you mean? He's pointing someplace 100 yards away. And I said, well, we can drive the boat over there, and if we had a fish finder, he said, well, then if you drove the boat over there, you'll spook the fish. I said, yeah. So in any event, he stewed on that for a while. He caught some fish. 3 days later, he went home. I guess about a month later, he sends me an email, and he says, what if you had a castable device that you can, that you can cast 100 feet away? Over there, keep your boat where it is, but cast 100 feet away instead of driving your boat over there with your $3,000 super duper fish finder. You can see on your smartphone what's over there in terms of the depth, in terms of the presence of fish, in terms of the water temperature, etc., etc. And I said, yeah, right, Alex, that's Star Wars. No, it's not. So I guess less than a year later, he said, I'm going to go to ICAST with some prototypes. I said, prototypes of what? He had three prototypes made of the iBobber using sonar technology. That is a small little device, just maybe a little bit bigger than a golf ball. Very lightweight. in castable. Castable meaning I can put it on a spinning rod, bait caster, whatever, and cast it up to 100 feet away from where I am, whether I'm in a kayak, a bass boat, on the shore, cast it, put the rod down, open up my iPhone, my smartphone, and sync the two. Now, there's an app that you download, which is free. So I already have the app in the phone. Go to the app, and it says connect. Connect, boop, boop. There's my fish finder out there 100 feet away, looking up to 135 feet deep. On my phone is the screen. Every time a fish comes under that eye bobber 100 feet away, you will see the indication on my screen, on my phone or iPad. Now, that's the basics of it. Let's talk about the features. When those fish appear, you'll know the depth of those fish. You'll know the size of those fish because they will either have a red marker on that fish indicator or a green one. If it's a green marker, that fish is over 15 inches.
Wow.
If that is a red marker, it's under 15 inches. And you also know the depth of it because on that marker where that little fish symbol goes across, the depth is already there, and it matches up with a line on the left-hand side that describes the depth of that particular area in which you're fishing. Okay, that's the basis. Let me continue on, because if I don't want to stand there and look at this screen because I'm casting somewhere else, et cetera, and I want to pay attention to what else I'm doing, and that eye bobber is still out there, but I don't want to be my eyes glued to the screen to see if there's anything coming under.
Sure.
I dropped on the menu, and I put on fish alarm.
Oh, my goodness.
Every time a fish comes into that screen or into that field under the eye bobber, boop, boop, you'll have an audible signal from your phone. But let's say I want to reel that eye bobber in, put a hook and a line off of the eye bobber, much like you would a real bobber fishing. You would drop a tie line onto the bobber, drop it down, you know, 24 inches, put a worm on. But you know what? I don't want to sit there and stare at that eye bobber. I put on the strike alarm. I pull down the menu, has a little strike alarm, push the button. Now the eye bobber out there 100 feet away is armed. Every time there's a strike on that eye bobber, boop, you're going to get a signal, reach down, set the hook. You don't have to stare at that bobber. Wait a minute. It still does more. Let's say it's at twilight, and Duran, I'm fishing, and I cast it out there, and I'm saying, wait a minute, it got kind of dark. Where is that eye bobber? Drop down the menu, put on light. And there it is. It's out there flashing.
Unbelievable.
And so that if there are fish present, you know where your eye bobber is. You can cast around it with your other rods. So it does all of that in terms of being able to locate and help you catch more and more fish.
Jim Cardillo is our guest. Hold on a second before we get too far, because I know we're going to run up against the break right now.
Good.
So,
great.
Jim Cardillo is our guest. Eye bobber is the topic. Reel, R-E-E-L, sonar.com. A link on our website, wildmichiganradio.com. We're going to speak with more and maybe get some more groovy sound effects with Jim here, talking about the eye bobber, brought to you by Costa Sunglasses. We are Wild Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network.
At the bottom of a real tall cold drink, chilling to some Skinner or some Mohang.
You can join us on Facebook or listen to podcasts, all from our website at wildmichiganradio.com. Now, back to Duran Martinez and Wild Michigan.
Hey, up in the backwoods, down in the holler. Old boy's feeling like a dog on a collar. Keeping that chain pulled tight. Waiting on Saturday night.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I am Duran Martinez, your host on the Michigan Talk Network. 10 years of outdoors radio, 10 years of Wild Michigan. Very happy to be in that year number. And I tell everybody when we started this show, you know, with a week's notice, yeah, go ahead and put a show on. We didn't really realize that we would be going 10 years, much less 10 days at that point in time. In that 10 years, we have come across a lot of very cool things, some cool technology. We are doing that yet again. Jim Cardillo is our guest here. He is with Real Sonar, RealSonar.com. And we are talking about the Eyebobber. And Jim, I appreciate you coming back for a second segment. Now, I want to ask about the technology involved, again, without breaking my brain, because that's very easy to do. But with sonar, you have a downward angle, like a cone shape, that this that fish will fall into. What is the area this will cover, and how deep will it go for coverage?
Okay, good questions. Although I'm not the technology person in the program, let me tell you that the cone angle approximates 90 degrees. Most devices are 20-degree cones. So the depth that this would penetrate and read is up to 135 feet down. So you can imagine what the distance would be at that, what the area of coverage would be at that distance at an approximate 90 degrees. So that's the technology aspect. And if you talk to someone a little bit more technologically astute about this product in the Real Sonar program, they'll tell you, well, it's not really 90 degrees. It's less than that. And it also has an effect on the depth. So there's some kind of a ratio there. But for my practical purposes and where I fish, I don't fish for lake trout at 90 feet or 135 feet. For anything that I do typically in 30 feet of water and 8 or 10 feet of water, etc., it's more than adequate in terms of the cone being a 90 degree and the penetration going up to 135 feet deep.
Now, one of the questions, because I have a mobile electronics device that I use for ice fishing, which also has an adapter for a boat, but this is strictly castable. Is it conditioned to be able to use ice fishing? Because this is something that has the similar sonar technology in the downward cone shape, would be more than adequate for fish alarms and sight. And whatever else, but will it take the cold?
Great. The answer to that question is absolutely. As a matter of fact, the other devices that are out in the market are significantly larger. The other devices are not castable. If you were to cast them, you certainly would spook the fish. They're so large, and you'd need quite a stronger wire or line and a larger rod to handle something that large. This is very, very small. It being so small that if I had a hole in the ice, I could be fishing and have this in that hole in the ice, and you wouldn't even know how much space it would take up. Like I said, it's only slightly larger than a golf ball, and it will hold up to the cold. It's obviously impervious to any water, etc. So there shouldn't be a problem with it. It'll last one single charge will last 8 to 10 hours, and it would be ideal for ice fishing.
That's a other question I have. You brought up a good point. Rechargeable, yes.
Absolutely. When you purchase the Eyebobber, it comes with a charging cradle with USB plug. So you snap it into the cradle, plug it into your computer or the adapter to plug it into a wall, and it will charge. And it takes generally an hour to 2 hours, and it'll flash. First of all, when you plug it in, it'll light up a blue ring. When that blue ring starts flashing, you know it's a full charge. Unplug it, put it in your pocket, or put it in the pouch that's available with it. It comes standard. I like to put it in my pocket, my shirt pocket, or you can put it in your tackle box. It's that small. It comes with a snap swivel attached to the Eyebobber, mm-hmm. and that's what you can put on your dedicated line or your rod so that you can just grab it and cast it. But if you only brought one rod, then unsnap the swivel, snap on your favorite lure, snap on the swivel and the Eyebobber, on and off. But I'd like to have a dedicated rod simply for it, and the snap swivel comes with it. There are two actual holes eyelets on the Eyebobber. One is for the line, And the other one, obviously, if you want to use it as a bobber to have a descending line down with a hook and a worm on it, you can use it that way.
Jim, it's you know, all this stuff sounds great on radio, and I think being able to discuss it before people make an uneducated decision, because what they're going to see initially, it's a very small box. It's a red and white bobber looking thing, and it has a price point of $99.95, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct. It's like just under $100.
But the technology involved is absolutely amazing. I mean, I'm not a technology guy. I'm just not. I've got a couple of things that probably have way more features than I'll ever know, but I know it can do this one thing, and I'm good.
Well, let me run briefly and talk about Bluetooth Smart 4.0 technology. That ensures low battery usage. Bluetooth Smart 4.0 is the latest technology, and it also ensures constant connectivity. There's no break in the connection between you and the iBobber. So that's the reason why we employ Bluetooth Smart 4.0. It's the latest.
Now, let me ask you, let me go back to the battery question. And forgive me for not knowing the exact type of battery, but there are some batteries that can be used that are not affected by the cold, that won't run the charge down. And everybody's screaming at their radio right now, answering the question for me. Does this that contain that type of rechargeable battery that it won't be affected by temperatures like that?
It could be affected by temperature, but not significantly. And I apologize. Not sure what type of battery this is, other than it is rechargeable. And I've had one, as a matter of fact, it's sitting right in front of me on my desk as I'm speaking to you. I've had this one for, I'm going to say, two years.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing that it suggests that you do is charge it once a month.
Excellent.
And that charge once a month, much like your car battery, if you let it set for 2 years, the charge leaves it. But if you start your car up, it recharges itself. So the maintenance required by the owner is to simply put it in the cradle, plug it in, and when it starts flashing, unplug it, put it in the box, you know, forget about it until next month. So if you do that, you'll ensure a much longer life for years, and the usage of it will be uninterrupted.
Now, I know I'm probably thinking about a lithium ion battery, and that's...
That sounds familiar.
Okay, and you know, again, I just know that that's the type of batteries I use for my trail cameras because I can leave them out in the cold. Some batteries are affected by the cold, and then others, again, are not.
Yeah, and I can say this to you. If you're using it, and it instead of 10-hour length of time, it drops down to 8 because of conditions that are naturally usurp the power out of a lithium battery. My question is: Are you going to be out there in that cold for 8 hours? And you know, so it's proportional, and you may lose some time. And I don't know technologically to speak with confidence on this because it's a subject that I'm not too familiar with the technology, other than what I've spoken to you about.
No, that's completely fair. About a minute left in the segment, but I want to tell you too. I watched the videos. You can see that there's a link on our website to the iBobber and a Real Sonar. The videos that I've watched, a young man uses them in a running stream and pulls out a couple of nice smallmouth from this river. You know, I mean, there's a lot of really different uses that we probably would have to do a whole other segment on. But, I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah. Recognize that it has a trip log that you can actually put in the type of fish, the type of conditions, the type of lure that you use, the quantity. Download that. It also has the GPS coordinates in this trip log. Once you have that, you either elect to archive it so you can return to the exact same GPS coordinates and fish again next year, 2 years. You can send it via social media to your friends and say, look what I did, look what I used, look what the conditions are. So the trip log is a feature. The weather station, it'll tell you the air temperature, water temperature, barometric pressure, the direction of the wind, has a lunar calendar. You can set it for any language, and it's just unbelievable.
Absolutely amazing. Jim Cardillo, thank you so much for joining us. the Eyebobber. Look for it. Real Sonar, R-E-E-L, sonar.com. A link on our website, wildmichiganradio.com. We're going to be talking more about that. Maybe we'll have a chance for you to win one. That's coming up soon on Wild Michigan.